Click. Welcome to Session 2 of Day 1, Fellowship of the Spirit International Easter Lockdown. Hopefully everyone's had a nice relaxing meal break, or hopefully you enjoyed the moderated session in the breakout room with Lauren and Cherie working behind the scenes. So thanks, girls, for your service there. So in our early afternoon, your late night session, we will have two more steps panels, and our final speaker for the night will be Larsine G from Hawthorne, California. She will be our Al-Anon speaker. Just want to give a quick shout out again to M&M Audio, Mike from recoverytapers.com. Their details have been on your screen there. There's a website you can visit, so please support those guys. They're working really hard behind the scenes and they do a great job. So I would like to first open this session with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Excuse me. I would now, if I could, like to call on the lovely Jodie W. from, I believe, Vaucluse, New South Wales, Australia, who is going to chair this session for us. Are you there, Jodie? I've just unmuted you.
Hi, friends. My name's Jodie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jodie.
Thanks, Damien. My home group's Vaucluse Recovery Group in Sydney. We meet at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and when this is all over, you're very welcome to come and join us in person or on Zoom until then. The Step 4 and 5 panel for the Fellowship of the Spirit lockdown. Welcome, everyone. I want to ask, first of all, before we start, that we all observe a few moments' silence to reflect upon our primary purpose and the still sick and suffering alcoholic and their family members, both inside and outside the room. Today we have three speakers on the panel. Each of them has been provided with a reading upon which we have asked them to share their experience for 15 minutes. Each panel will be followed by a 30-minute Q&A session after the three panels have spoken. Please send your questions via the chat function on your Zoom display, and we'll attempt to get through as many of the questions as possible. Our first reading comes from page 64 and 65 of our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. And that's from chapter 5 of How It Works, page 64 and 65. I'd now like to introduce to you Kenny D from Seattle, Washington, to share for 15 minutes. Thanks, Kenny. I am muting Kenny.
Yeah,
hi, Kenny.
I'm really super happy to be here. I've been listening a good part of the day today, and you guys have done just a fine job. And thank you so much for the reading. I'm just incredibly, I'm just really filled with gratitude and just, you know, the overwhelming sense of the presence of my fellow alcoholics and the presence of God. And I was certainly somebody that fooled myself about the value of what the stock in trade was with Kenny. This was this was something that, you know, it took this piece, like the piece that you read, that this, you know, this being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what defeated us. And I had to consider some of those common manifestations. And it was one of the first eye openers that I had that my problems were of my own making. And although that sounds a bit daunting, it really is like so beautiful, and it's such good news to us alcoholics, because if my problems are of my own making, then nobody else has to get well in order for me to be better. And, you know, we have discussions about surrender and, you know, that we have to surrender in these earlier steps. But here they use the word defeated. And I had talked one time about, you know, how I came in and I had to surrender. And my spiritual mentor, one of my spiritual mentors said, "Kenny, I've heard your story. You know, you didn't surrender. You were defeated." And that was the way it was. I did my first couple of fist steps at a little car lot down on here in Seattle that was owned by my sponsor. And it was the place where I lived for the first year of my sobriety. And, you know, when I can still drive by that place today, and I've been sober, I should say, since June the 8th of 1989. So 30 years later, I can drive by that place and I see the same place. And I just know, like, man, you know, on this spot, a man was crushed over under the weight of his own selfishness and self-centeredness, that was the problem. And so we consider these common manifestations. And one of the things I think that's been on my mind today is I thought, you know, I just have been so fortunate in Alcoholics Anonymous that when we got through the steps in my early sobriety, I think I was less than a year sober when we finished up the steps, my first trip through, and I was at 12, step 12, and they said, "You got to give this away in order to keep it." And I'd had those moments where I would just feel this, I would just be walking down the street on the way home from a meeting some night, and I didn't have anything, you know, there was no material things going on in my life. I was living at this car lot, and I would just walk, and I would just get a little shiver in my spine, and I would just kind of little shiver, and I just think, man, it's good to be alive. And I really wanted to keep that. So I've had the, you know, and they said, in order to keep it, I got to give it away. And in these 30 years, I can honestly say that not once during those 30 years have I not been working with somebody. So I've seen this steps 4 and 5 on both ends of the spectrum. And in those 30 years, I think somewhere I've seen, somewhere in the neighborhood, I've probably sat and listened, a lot of them here in this room where I'm sitting tonight. I've heard, you know, somewhere, you know, in the neighborhood of somewhere above 100 fist steps. So I've had a chance to see this at work in action. You know, there's something I really liked that Bill said, it's in the 12 and 12, I think it's step 4, but he said that this is our first tangible evidence of our complete willingness to move forward. Our work up to this point was highly theoretical, and that step 1, 2, and 3, yeah, that's all in theory, but we get to a place in step 4, and the book says that this is as far as most of us ever got to conclude that other people were wrong. In other words, still in this misvaluation of the stock and trade, I believed that it was other people that were to blame. And so, you know, how do I go, you know, like why do we have to go past step three? What is it? And I think when we say that this is as far as most of us ever got, I think sadly that could be said for a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we just, I find that when I talk about these things, people in AA are hungry for this stuff. You know, I can't open up enough time for all the people that want to do this work. That's the God's truth in my life, that people are hungry for this kind of message. It's why you've got, you know, 800 people on a meeting like this. People want to know, like, how do I do this? How do I get through this experience? And, you know, so what are these common manifestations? To me, it says, you know, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And of course, there again, my values, you know, I thought it was alcohol that was destroying me. I thought that it was the booze and the drugs that were destroying me. I didn't understand that it was this resentment that I held, some of them that I held in high value. And then the other common manifestations are fear and sex. And we wonder, like, gosh, you know, why is sex in that list? You know, why do I need an overhauling there? You know, it's the same reason that they give us for why are we going to do this? And when we go to into action and they say, well, why are you going to do why should you do this fifth step? You know, isn't it enough that I just go and admit these things to God, or can't I keep some of this stuff to myself? These people that they say that we only thought they'd humbled themselves. They hadn't done that to the degree that we found it necessary. And they use this language that those first several pages in into action, I think, they're so clear. You know, it's this classic Bill Wilson writing where he, you know, has this circular nature to his writing where he just tells you something and then he tells you something else and he ends up coming back around and telling you again. And it's those first pages into action, the message is pretty clear. Until we told somebody all in italics, that word all, our life story, you know, this withholding nothing. And it doesn't mean like all our life story, like, you know, I was born a small child in this little town. And it's talking about, hey, don't leave anything out. And it's the same reason why they say to do the fifth step in the first place, is that we might not overcome drinking if we don't do this. And they say, and it's the same thing in sex. They say that, hey, if we continue on this path and our behavior continues to hurt others, we're sure to drink. That's a pretty strong statement. So they have these common manifestations that things that are picked out. And you know, there's an old poet. He was I think a Lebanese guy, but he had a saying that I think is so beautiful for us in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this was like 600 years ago. He said this, and he said that some of us come to God dancing, but some of us come carried in on a stretcher. And that's the way people come to us when they come with their fifth steps. People, that's my experience, is that people are, you know, suffering greatly under all of this stuff. And you know, it's the reason we don't just get to stop at step three. That, you know, why do we have to go past step three? If we could just turn our will and our life over to the care of God, we'd have a three-step program. But we can't do that because we're blocked from the very thing that will save our life. We're blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit, that the sunlight of the spirit is being blocked through these resentments and fears and our conduct in relationships that were blocked. And so what would happen if those things were removed as we go forward from step five? If those things are removed, then I will know the presence of God. That's how this deal works, and that's how that's why we have these steps, and in particular step four and five is to remove some of these things. So I'll give you, you know, a good example of what happened in my life is that, you know, I sat down with my fifth step in early sobriety, and I was, you know, the person I read my fifth step to had to say, hey, Kenny, you know, we're not here to try to fix you. You know, this life I had, because I had, you know, there was the divorces in my family. There was the institutions that I'd been in, and the group homes and the foster homes, and, you know, a rough childhood, and being locked up, being abandoned, being in terrible relationships, being in, you know, hardcore alcoholism and drug addiction. It just went on and on. There was no, you know, 20 years on the psychiatry couch was not going to fix this. And you know, I had that realization, kind of this big bang that we can get in step five, that, man, you know, I'm not here to try to fix these. This is about, you know, this is about determining what those things are that I'm going to carry forward into six and seven and ask God to remove those things. And this is about me getting a whole new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And just one example of that is that, you know, my biggest resentment at the top of the paper was my mom, you know, in the columns. The first column, my mom. The second column was a pretty simple little piece of inventory. She ruined my life. So that was pretty clear. It affected all these areas of my life, and where, you know, where was I selfish? And thank God, I think we've got people, you know, that in our fellowship, that it's not like I was reading my fifth step to a brick wall. You know, I had somebody that listened to it and said, man, Kenny, was it really all bad? Was it really all bad? Wasn't there anything good that happened? And, you know, I had to realize, oh, yeah. I said, well, what about Christmas? Was there ever Christmas? Yeah, we had Christmas presents under the tree when I was a kid. My mom was an alcoholic. She was a single mother at that time. And you know, for many years when we were growing up. But somehow she pulled that off. You know, we had a Christmas. And well, did you get food? Yeah, we had food. It wasn't the best, you know, it wasn't always, I'd get corn flakes. And I always, you know, I wanted the frosted flakes. But was there a roof over your head? And then he asked me something, and he had no way of knowing this. It's that tenth step. It's that thing that comes in the tent that they talk about in these 10th step promises, this intuition and inspiration, this vital sixth sense, which means we get to sense what it is that somebody else may need to hear from us. And he said, well, Kenny, how old was your mom when you were born? And I had to think back on it. And my mom was 19 years old when she was pregnant with me. I was 28 years old when I got sober, probably 28 or 29 when I was doing that fifth step. And here I was, you know, I was going to blame this person for all of my problems. And, you know, I had this realization, man, that, I just, you know, I had this flood of these memories coming back, that when I was a kid, my mom was a folk singer, and she used to play music in the coffee shops around the university district in Seattle to make money to help take care of us kids. And she, you know, she would every single night when I was a kid, I can remember my mother coming into my room and sitting on the floor and playing her guitar and singing Bob Dylan songs and The Answer My Friend Is Blowing in the Wind. And, she would, you know, and I remember just loving it. I just remember just loving laying there and listening to my mom sing and, you know, how wonderful that was. And I had this realization that the truth was, you know, I had this whole story in my mind about my childhood. And the truth was, is that, yeah, there were some problems in my home, but I grew up in a home that had great love. And so I'm at my 15 minutes. I'm going to stop there. I'm actually at 14 minutes. So I'm going to give 30 seconds extra to my friend Bill and to our other speaker tonight. So they can thank me for that. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Kenny. Great to hear you.